Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Emoji moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Ameth, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
You know, when I first started this podcast, it was called Wading In, which is a pun on my name, Wade. The first few episodes, they weren't political or overly cultural, but it was always something that was on my mind. And the person I am in real life is very much a religion and politics guy. Fiercely and even annoyingly so, depending on who you ask. And I don't usually hold back. I'm generally pretty blunt. But it can be overwhelming at times. I felt like I was paying so much more attention to things around me than maybe the people around me. And I would always get eye rolls from just the regular people whenever those sorts of conversations would come up because I tended to always dominate the speaking. So podcasting became a funny outlet for me to read and learn about the not super political things, though inevitably my own beliefs are peppered in. I've said more than a few times that I'm Christian, and I'm sure you can pick out my libertarian slash conservative leanings. But it feels like something changed the other day, when we all saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated. Maybe it was for the first time we all got to see a public figure assassinated in gruesome fashion, in real time. Right, left, or indifferent, it was just unavoidable. And it's sure to be a historical moment and fit for a podcast called Lore and Legends. If you ask me, an invisible line was crossed, and I think we all know it. Our culture is deeply fractured. There might not be any hope of unification left. And who am I kidding? I feel the despair in this moment, and right now, I don't actually think there is much hope. I think our once great society might be on its way out. John Adams, one of the chief founders of the United States of America, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, whose book, Thoughts on Government, influenced the yet-to-be-written Constitution, would eventually become president and then later his son, too. Well, he once said, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. That is so true. You see, what order and respect and tolerance really require is a high degree of self-restraint rooted in something greater than the self. And that thing, especially in the West, isn't a thing at all. It's God. Full stop. In the postmodern world, the liberal world, we've raced, in one way or another, to excuse God from every corner of society, instead adopting a phony live-and-let-live, very, maybe even overly libertine view of society, poisoned by our own success and coddled by the safety afforded to us by decades of restraint. We thought we could get away with it. And we woke up in a world where we can't even agree on a definition of murder, or Nazi, and much less have any cohesive idea of what might make a killing justified, as is on full display post-murder of Irina Zarutska and Charlie Kirk, as people make excuses, or even celebrate. The thought that we all mourn violence, regardless of our politics, is weaker than maybe it ever has been in America. So what do you do? Well, to me it seems like the only sensible answer right now is separation. But how do you do that in a multicultural society with no clear lines delineating one group from another? We spent a century overcoming differences through faith, only now to reassert those differences through policy and force and put them in the same room again. I don't know what the answers are, because the only things I can think of in the moment, from a culture or a policy perspective, would require an escalation in force, and it would be ugly, brutal, and have a lingering permanence in altering the disposition of the American experiment, even if they were to fail. As a Christian, it's heartbreaking, enraging. For so long, we took so much for granted that we let these monsters define us through our sense of compassion and empathy. Our fear of gatekeeping made us afraid to judge, to teach our kids how to live and how to respond. In many places, that compassion became false compassion. The late Pope Francis, who was far from my favorite, spoke about false compassion, disguising itself as a dignifying force. Pope Pius XII spoke about false irenicism, being overly conciliatory and compromising truth for the sake of near-term peace and sentiment. It really reminds me of Matthew chapter 7. Judge not, that you be judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, "Let me remove the speck from your eye," and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite! First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give what is holy to the dogs. Do not cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn and tear you to pieces. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. Beware of false prophets, who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes, or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits, you will know them. Not everyone who says to me, "Lord, Lord," shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, "Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?" And then I will declare to them, "I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness." Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell. And great was its fall. And so it was, when Jesus had ended these sayings, that the people were astonished at his teaching. For he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes. I think about that section a lot. It's tricky, but it might be one of the more important ones there is. Discernment and judgment are challenging. They're very serious undertakings with real and heavy consequences. But if we follow our faith and are not deceived by our hearts, we all know the direction we must go. We have very few culture warriors who managed to navigate that path, being peaceful, truly compassionate, without coddling people in their lives, and faithful to that spirit until the end. Charlie Kirk was undoubtedly one of those, and his murder, him being just a guy like me, is an alarming signal that we can't just sit around anymore and take our world and our comfort for granted. But to switch gears a little bit, I titled the last part of this episode, Chaos Demon. So here's why, and what I think about all this. This is a generational event, and there is, of course, a lot of talk about the killer, his motives, his disposition, and what justice might come and what it will mean. A lot of people, like myself, would say that they feel the crossing of that invisible line, even if we can't fully articulate what it is or what it means. But one thing that has popped up, on the right in particular, is an effort to claim this murder was like some sort of a professional hit, or an otherwise organized thing. Most of the stuff online seems to suggest that it was driven by the Israelis in particular. They cite Charlie's seemingly increasing criticisms of the government of Israel, and will even go as far as to suggest that Ben Shapiro filling some of his late speaking engagement slots is indicative of that. You know, I have my own fair share of criticisms about the government of Israel, and I think a lot of American Christians get way too wrapped up in this 1948 secular nation-state somewhere in the Middle East in a very small fraction of the boundaries of biblical Israel. And I think there's a lot of discussion to be had about what Israel actually means in the New Testament. And I think there is a lot of bad eschatology, particularly in American Protestantism, that has led to a lot of bad foreign policy and a lot of ignorance of things that affect the world. But as far as it relates to Charlie Kirk, I call bullshit. And here's the reason, and why I use the term chaos demon. The shot was taken from 200 yards, less than that, actually. It's not a particularly difficult shot, especially from a supported prone position with a clear line of sight and a high-powered rifle, with even minimal practice. Maybe you're not shooting quarters with an old World War II-era Mauser, but you're hitting small pie tins all day long. Anyone who's ever hunted any sort of animal or done an amount of target shooting knows this. A bullet with a flat trajectory, which 30-06 has, and a modest shooter will still be able to land shots within a few inches of the crosshairs every time. In fact, when I was into target shooting, I would often sight the rifle into max point-blank range, which is the maximum distance at which a projectile will hit a given size target, accounting for the rise and fall in the bullet's trajectory. This is useful when you're hunting small game or shooting at small targets, because the point isn't to necessarily hit a bullseye per se, but to make the bullseye bigger. So like lungs, heart, liver, head, even beer cans are steel targets. They're not something that is less than a third the size of an inch, you know, the size of a 30 caliber bullet. I'm not saying this guy did that or understood that. I'm just saying that you can actually miss the bullseye and still get a lethal hit. It's not complicated. In my opinion, this wasn't some sniper aiming for a vein in the neck. It was a guy who actually probably missed his intended target, but was supported enough and accurate enough to still get a fatal hit. Second, I don't think it was a masterful plan. He was spotted days before, according to witnesses, who just thought it was a weirdo on a roof. He was also sighted that day by multiple people from a few different angles, who again, just thought weirdo on a roof. He was also sighted jumping off of the roof, risking a serious injury that would have prevented escape. He was then seen up close by multiple security cameras that ultimately led to his identification and arrest. Does all of that, and the fact that it was an old World War II era rifle, really make you think professional? In an age of tremendously superior guns that are even cheaper? All the motives match, from the militant Antifa mentality to the obsessive sexual identity politics. It's so perfect, in fact, that people are using that to say that it was planted. And that last part, well, to me, that's the chaos demon on the right. The fact is, at least as far as I'm concerned, that this guy being an ideological amateur is far more terrifying than him being a professional Mossad or otherwise intelligentsia or even cartel-linked puppet. Clinging to that hope that this was some sort of state-level actor or member of some mysterious underground cabal that all humanity would be united against if only they knew is just the last vestiges of people who still want to feel coddled by the secure reality in which all of our problems can be solved by just voting harder, passing a new law, or just arresting the right person. It's a World War II mentality, if I might say so, where the combatants are wearing uniforms, and regardless of how bad the carnage is, you always have the faint moral clarity that it can be won physically, just at a price. The reality, I fear, is simpler and more obvious. That invisible line was a fracture in our own society at a spiritual level. One person killed another person, they thought they knew, just because of what he said and what he believed. He did it with an inexpensive and even subpar tool in an atmosphere where we want to believe we are safe. But that's the chaos demon. Even the people on one side of the line can't agree on what the line actually is. But they are correct in that they sense a battle much bigger than just you and I is underway. It's just that they're denying that it's a great and terrible spiritual struggle, and it's here now. Sure, if you take the Israel approach, I guess you can argue that there's a faith component and thus spiritual struggle, but in doing so, you rob the countless multitudes of Americans of all persuasions of the very agency that faith says we all have. And no one knows what to do, but everyone knows it's hard and is caught in that crippling moment. Will we all rise up in some sort of spiritual unison, fix the people who make up our culture at a root level? Or will we sit and wait for the proverbial Caesar to cross the Rubicon? I don't know the answers, but this all weighs very heavily on my mind. Today, as I record this, it's Sunday the 14th, and the sermon I heard at church today was actually a little bit subversive. It didn't ignore things, but it didn't really dwell on them either. On one hand, it felt like a cop-out, I guess, relative to what I wanted to hear. But on the other hand, it was actually pretty challenging. If I had to summarize it, I'd tell you this old story that you may or may not have heard before. One day, an elderly man was walking along a vast, desolate beach after a fierce storm. As far as the eye could see, the shore was littered with thousands of starfish that had been washed up by the high tide. They lay stranded on the hot sand, drying under the rising sun, destined to perish as the tide receded. In the distance, the man spotted a young boy. The child was bending down every few steps, picking up a starfish from the sand and gently tossing it back into the frothing waves of the ocean. With each throw, the starfish splashed into the turf and hopefully back to safety. Curious, the old man approached the boy. "Young man," he called out, "what are you doing?" The boy paused, wiping sweat from his brow, and replied without hesitation, "I'm throwing these starfish back into the ocean. The tide washed them up, and if they stay here, the sun will bake them and they'll die." The man chuckled softly, shaking his head. He gestured toward the endless expanse of the beach, dotted with countless stranded starfish stretching for miles in both directions. "Son," he said kindly but firmly, "look around you. There are thousands of these starfish, hundreds for every mile of shore. You can't possibly save them all. What difference can one boy throwing starfish make?" The boy listened politely, his expression thoughtful. Then, without a word, he bent down, picked up another starfish from the wet sand, a small vibrant creature still clinging to life, and hurled it with all his might back into the sea. It arced through the air and landed with a satisfying plop on the waves, carried away by the current. Turning back to the old man, the boy smiled, a simple defiant grin, and said, "What made a difference to that one?" None of us can change the world in the comments section of Reddit, the newspaper, Twitter, X, Facebook, whatever you want to call it. None of us. But we could always impact someone we know. Christians, we're all called to carry our cross and to pursue God's will, not our own. It won't always make sense to us, and sometimes we don't even get an explanation. But the point is that it isn't going to be easy, and may in fact be the death of us. Charlie Kirk, even though I have my personal critiques of him, and maybe some of his style and some of the things he said over the years, probably represented that, though, better than most of us ever have. So I don't actually have a clever ending paragraph conclusion here. I guess I would just think that, you know, discernment is hard, but it's not impossible. I think the hardest thing is telling people no when saying no is unpopular. And I think we have to be on guard against maybe what we want to see happen in the world, but we have to understand that that's going to be tough in its own right. And maybe sometimes we get so caught up in looking at all the thousands of the starfish on the beach that we miss the thing that's right in front of us. What can we actually do? And where can we actually have meaning and purpose? And where can we actually make a difference? I think that's the question we all need to think about more than anything. Because we know what's right and we know what's wrong. So what else do we really need? Well, that's all for now. Thanks for hanging with me on this one. It's a little heavy, a little more political, I guess, than I probably usually go on this. But hey, maybe I'll finally go finish up the Crusader stories that I started. Seems like the timing is as relevant as ever. Anyway, thanks for listening. See you next time.
A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Amid, founder of Mochi Health. To find your mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.